David Sanger is the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. He's written a new book about how President Obama has redefined American foreign policy and the circumstances under which the U.S. will use diplomacy, coercion, and force to shape the world around it. His previous book, The Inheritance, was about the foreign policy problems President Obama faced when he took office. Sanger has been the member of two teams that won the Pulitzer Prize. His new book is called Confront and Conceal: Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. It is a great pleasure to welcome David Sanger back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be back with you. Can't wait to get up to your region a little bit this summer myself.
Well, of course, this book has created an awful lot of ink as far as the stories that were published, so I don't want to bury the lead. Do you feel that the information that came out in your reporting, do you feel that the information that came out in this book, that you were part of a conscious effort by the Obama administration to leak security information to reporters?
I don't think that that's really the way that this stuff sort of works. I mean, I know the phrase leak gets thrown around a lot. It doesn't bear a lot of resemblance to the reporting process. You know, I was at work on Confront and Conceal for 18 months, really earlier if you think about the material I was gathering just as President Obama was coming into office. And the last book that you mentioned, The Inheritance, said outright that President Bush had begun to designate some computer attacks against Iran. So I was pulling on that string. And then as the book, the Confront and Conceal, opens with the scene in 2010 of a big mistake that got made as the computer worm that had been put into Natanz got out through just a programming error. It was not a deliberate mistake by any means. It was just an error. And as a result, it got around the world and the Iranians got to see that they were under a cyber attack. And so a good deal of just the Iran section of the book, and as you said, the book's about much more, Afghanistan and Pakistan and China and so forth, but just this part really pulls on the string of what that tells you about the use of a new weapon of war by the United States.
Do you understand the concern when John McCain makes the rounds on the Sunday talk shows and calls for a special prosecutor and a full investigation? Do you understand the concerns?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, the balance between having a free press and not violating national security, putting ongoing operations at risk, putting lives at risk, is something that if you're in my job, you live with every day. And I teach on this subject as well. So it's something I've given a lot of thought about. And we have a pretty standard way of dealing with this at the New York Times, and I used it for the book as well, which is you gather your material, and then before you publish, you go to the government and you say, look, here's what we have. And if there are issues here that are truly going to interfere with ongoing operations or put lives at risk, we need to discuss it, and we need to work it out so that that doesn't appear in print. And that's what we did here.
Do you feel at all that, and obviously, as you mentioned, this is something that you think about. So do you feel at all that with information and your access to information, that you as a reporter and us as a public can be manipulated somewhat easily?
Yes, we can be manipulated. We can all be manipulated in life. I know what the reporting process for this book was, and it was from the ground up. So, you know, I saw a set of events that happened, including the one I just described to you, and then, as I said, pulled on that string around the world and tried to unwrap that story. Now, of course, if you are running for president, your political advisors want to portray you, whether you're President Obama or before that President Bush, as a strong leader sitting in the Situation Room making presidential-sounding decisions, because a non-incumbent can't do that. And you know that as you're talking to people. But that's a different thing from sorting out just the facts of what happened. And Confront and Conceal is first and foremost a book about what happened.
The book starts out with information that you learned about the virus that apparently the U.S. is behind that attacked the centrifuges in Iran's nuclear program and set back that nuclear program. What did you find out that we did not know before that?
Well, previously we had written that the United States and Israel appeared to be likely to be at the center of this, and previously we had written about the virus itself. I think what you learn from Confront and Conceal is how big a role the rise of cyber weapons have taken in the United States as a new part of our arsenal, and that, you know, the U.S. has never admitted to using cyber weapons, but like all new new weapons, you have to begin to think, the American public's got to begin to think, about when and how you want to go use them, because you want rules around these. So think of it this way. After the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and I would not say that these cyber weapons have the same power as an atomic bomb, but after the A-bomb was dropped, we spent 20 or 30 years debating as a country how to make use of those weapons or when you'd want to use them. And there were people who wanted to use them again in Korea and again in the Cuban Missile Crisis. They were shouted down. We've gone through the same issue with intercontinental ballistic missiles, and for the past 10 years we've gone through them with drones, and we're still debating when you want to go use drones. Well, with cyber, we really have to have that debate, because obviously the United States is very vulnerable to cyber attacks ourselves. You want to think really hard about when you use it.
When it comes to how it was actually done, because as you write in the book, that the Iranian nuclear program is not connected to the internet, so how was the virus introduced?
There I get into the wording very carefully, because, you know, obviously one thing that people get concerned about is, you know, how they actually get this stuff in. But it seems clear that because it was not, this plant was not connected to the internet, as you say, you have to walk it in. It's got to come in with either a witting or an unwitting person who's got access to the plant. And that has been one of the great challenges for the United States, and they overcame that challenge in Olympic Games.
You talk in the book at some length, and this goes back, as you mentioned, to your previous book, Inheritance, of what this president inherited and how that set him up. But in this scene that we have just talked about, the president was very involved.
Very deeply involved, as was President Bush before him. I mean, I think the remarkable thing about this cyber warfare program, like the drones program, is that President Obama inherited this from President Bush and then doubled down and tripled down on it. And he did it because he had a new sense of sort of what he calls the light footprint strategy, which is that you have to use America's technological advantage if you're going to avoid the kind of conflicts that end up putting 100,000 troops into a country at a, you know, cost of $1 trillion if you combine Afghanistan and Iraq together, and huge casualties, and you breed resentments. I think President Obama has come to the conclusion that era is over for the United States. The American public is kind of tired of it after 10 or 11 years and really can't afford it. But that doesn't mean your threats go away. So he's looking for less expensive, higher-tech ways to accomplish the same thing with fewer casualties. Who wouldn't?
When you look at the inheritance, and you were on this show 3 years ago, 4 years ago, talking about that inheritance. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? What has surprised you in the way that the president has dealt with what he inherited?
Well, he certainly inherited a world on fire, both economically and in terms of the national security challenges. I think, you know, 3.5 years ago when we talked about that book, I think it was hard to imagine that we would be out of Iraq by the end of 2011, which we were. I think it would have been hard to imagine that a president who got elected so much on a platform of engagement would turn out, when he thought there were direct threats to the United States, to be so aggressive. I'm thinking not only of the bin Laden raid, but also of the cyber stuff, of the drone strikes and so forth. But the other thing that had not yet developed at that time was the other part of the Obama doctrine, which is that if there's not a direct threat to the United States, but just a general good, you know, something that you want to try to accomplish, like ending the civil war in Syria that has been so tragic, or taking out Muammar Gaddafi, the president's been much more active in trying to force countries that have a more direct interest than the U.S. does into taking the lead there, so that the U.S. isn't always the world's policeman. And some days that works, and some days, like Syria, it doesn't work.
When it comes to this particular, the computer worm and the virus that we mentioned at the beginning of the program, you write in the book that the president was afraid of starting a precedent, of being this power to launch this cyber attack against a sovereign state. And so obviously taken very seriously, and the concerns of what sort of Pandora's box that could open.
He was worried about two big things. One was collateral damage. He wouldn't want cyber attacks going in and turning off the electricity to hospitals, or doing things that would harm Iranians who were essentially innocent. He wanted something very targeted at the nuclear program. But his second big concern was you do create a precedent. So while the United States may have very sharp rules about how you design these weapons so that they don't do damage to the civilian population, it's not clear that whoever is the next one to attack the United States with a cyber weapon, and in some ways we're attacked each and every day, mostly just by people trying to collect information, you want to make sure that they also observe those same rules. And there's no way to guarantee that right now, because lots of people can do cyber. States can do it. Russia and China have great capability. But non-state actors can do it as well. And that's what makes cyber a particularly big, difficult challenge, because it's never clear where the attack's coming from, and you don't necessarily have to be a country to bring it about.
The subtitle of the book is Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. The surprising use of American power, is it still a surprise?
Well, I think the surprise is what you learn about Barack Obama with this. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do a nonpartisan book that came out prior to the election was to go examine how the president has handled this incredible array of challenges. And he has had to be very innovative in how he's used American power, not only because of the technological challenges we've discussed, but because of the financial constraints. You know, look, we are living in an age of austerity here, so there are things we have chosen not to do. You know, there's no Marshall Plan for the Arab Spring states. You know, we put big money into Eastern Europe when it broke free, when the former Soviet republics broke free. Obviously, we put big money into the Marshall Plan back in the post-World War II period. One of the fascinating questions is, can you shape the emerging countries of the Middle East after the Arab Spring without playing that kind of big money role? And so far, that's been a very mixed record.
David Sanger is the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and best-selling author of The Inheritance. The new book is Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. It is published by Crown. David Sanger, a pleasure to have you on the program. We look forward to having you back in the region soon. Thank you very much.
I look forward to seeing you up there.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Confront and Conceal. It is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.